hello. Normally, you'd be hearing Joey give an intro here. Unfortunately, he got strep throat this week, which is not super conducive to recording an intro or doing much of anything at all. Instead, he's using this delightful tool called Natural Reader Text-to-Speech to create a podcast intro. It's run on AI, and it's quite fitting because today's guest, Alicia Silberg, is perhaps the biggest fan of AI out there. It's even in the name of her company, Unemployable AI. And she shares how AI has played a major impact for her in her book, Unemployable: How AI Transformed My Work and Life. Joey and Alicia are chatting about how a pair of rollerblades led to an entrepreneurial career, common mistakes companies make, and the three weird things she does every day. I'm not Joey Held. This is Good People, Cool Things. And here's Joey's conversation with Alicia Silberg.
Can you give us your name, an elevator pitch, and also the type of elevator that we're riding on?
Hi, I'm Alicia. I'm the founder of Unemployable AI, and I also wrote a book, Unemployable: How AI Transformed My Work and My Life. And I've been an entrepreneur my entire life, and it's been an extraordinary journey, and I'm very excited to share it with you today.
Lovely. And you grew up in a makeup artist costuming world, and my really only experience with anything like that was when I was in high school, my friends and I did a Dawn of the Dead parody. And I was not even involved in this project, but they were just like, hey, do you want to be in this? I said, sure. And then they spent like 4 hours putting makeup on me for what ultimately was like a 20-second scene where I got to attack my friend on a person in our neighborhood's lawn who came out and was like, what's going on out here? So that was wonderful. But the act of all of that was like very chaotic. And so was that something that, like, did you have any interest in that? Or were you like, this is cool, but I'm going to do my own thing?
You summed it up so well. It was very cool, but chaotic. I grew up seeing my dad do a lot of what you were describing. And it was fascinating watching people go from being like normal people to being stars. So I could see like behind the scenes of like what it's like to create. But for me, I had bigger dreams. And so the idea that he had all these talents in terms of creating all these makeups from scratch and all kinds of stuff that's very popular today in terms of medicine and that, and he never knew how to scale it. I think that was where I was very frustrated, where I was like, okay, let's turn this into a big company. And I just kept having, you know, everyone saying, oh, you're a child, you don't understand this. And so already from a very young age, I'd heard of this place called America. And I was like, I'm going to this place where you get to create stuff and you get to scale stuff, because people there understand that that's cool. It's not just cool to just do the makeup part.
And you said that you've been an entrepreneur your whole life. You started an import-export agency when you were 11, which George Costanza has claimed to be an importing and exporting his whole life, but has never even pulled that off. So where was, like, how did an 11-year-old even know what importing and exporting was?
My life has been mad. So when I was 5 years old, I wanted to get these pink roller skates, and we couldn't afford them. And I was obsessive about them. And so I had to figure out how to get them. So, you know, my dad had lived in Hollywood, and he had all these cool 70s, like Superfly suits, and they were hanging there in plastic bags. So I was like, well, I have a problem, and I found the solution. I'm going to sell the suits. And so I did that. I created a shop outside my dad's shop. I sold the suits and rapidly sold them. And off I went and bought these pink roller skates. So ding, a light bulb goes off in my head and I'm like, I can do this. And so it was an adventure where by the time I was 11, I was very lucky. I had a brother who was, I think, as mad as me when it came to building stuff and creating stuff. And our dad had just, well, I was 10 at the time. My dad had just died and we were going to lose everything. It was very scary. We're going to literally end up on the street. So there was a lot of debt, and there was no support system in place. There was no security. There was no any type of money available. And so we had to be very entrepreneurial. And so he was 6 years older than me, and we had to figure out how could we possibly use whatever we had to create a business or to keep the business we had alive and find customers who would support us. And so it came from literally, like I tell founders, a burning problem. We had a problem. We were going to lose what was a business in shambles, and we had to find customers who would support it. And the only way we could do that was finding products that those customers would buy. So we'd write to embassies, we'd write to companies, you know, like in Asia, and we couldn't afford anything. So we had to be really smart about it in terms of getting samples and being able to sell those samples. You talk about creativity and talk about like ways of like figuring out, okay, we have to get people to keep sending us samples, because they're like, the moment they figured out, oh, they're selling the samples, they weren't going to sell us anymore. So we got super creative and we saved the business, but it was a trial by fire. I got to tell you, it was not easy. As I say, it took many years to deal with like, oh, wow, we had to do that. It taught me to be a good founder, but I developed a level of resilience that I was surprised I had.
What was one of the more unusual things that you ended up selling?
So this is a really funny story. So in South Africa, there was a big demand for, you know, like beautiful fake hair or wigs, you know, like hair extensions and those things. This was before like the Kardashians and that, and, you know, like this long hair. And so that was one of the things that we were looking to import, like, you know, like Black Like Me and a lot of those brands were very popular, but there was a shortage of product in South Africa. So my brother found these samples, and, you know, like you used to get these very thick books from suppliers in China and these places, and high gloss. They're very beautiful to look at. So we were looking at these things and we were writing and ordering, and I get shipped off. My mother goes with me to Asia, and then we order this container. So we eventually get enough money together and we order this container. I go to Asia. Picture me. I'm 5'6". Now, so I was tiny at the time, and I'm negotiating with these people. There's tons of paperwork, and our container is going to leave from Hong Kong, so come from China to Hong Kong to South Africa. And we're like rubbing our hands with glee. We're going to be super rich. Everything's going to be great because we've got this 40-foot container of beautiful long wigs and hair extensions, and everybody's going to want to buy from us. Well, let me tell you, we got the surprise of our lives. We got blonde hair that looked, I can't even describe it to you. It was so coarse. It looked like it was something that you'd use to like scratch your pots clean. It was like so bad. And it was like, I remember holding these wigs and they were like super thick and horrible. And it looked like, I can't even describe it to you, like an alien had arrived from another planet and it thought that that's how humans dressed. And we could do nothing with these things, and we had to write them off. And it was like, it was crazy. It was absolutely wild because we had an entire container, and that was a lesson. It was a lesson that you have to like really be savvy in business. I laugh to like today, they're probably still sitting there, like no one knew what to do with them. But it was an interesting time.
Maybe that's the pivot then, is you take those and market it as like scour pads for cleaning cutlery.
Like, it's like it was so thick, and it was in this plastic bag. It was clear plastic bag with this like bob haircut. It looked like something Fifth Element. Do you remember the girl with the Fifth Element? But this was like a blonde bad version of that. But that was quite an experience. To this day, I'm like, if I'd been like crazy good at branding and marketing, maybe I could have gotten like everyone in South Africa to be walking around with these like really weird looking blonde wigs and sets, like super cool, the latest and greatest. But no, I couldn't make it work at that time. I had to get a lot better at marketing.
I'm also curious, do you still roller skate?
I live in Venice, which is super cool because it's like the roller skating capital of the world. And one of my goals for 2024 was, as like, you know, learning to treat yourself better, learning to like build companies in a different way. And it's like, I'm getting a teacher, and I'm going to force myself just for fun to actually go once a week, twice a week, and just go with the teacher and have fun. You know, like really do cool stuff on the roller skates and that. So hold me accountable, because that's like one of my things for the year, that I'm just going to like put them on, because they won't otherwise. Otherwise, I don't go. So yes, there's your answer. Like, this is a priority. And if anyone wants to come roller skate with me, you can come find me in Venice Beach.
Excellent. And that's Venice, California, not Italy. Just to clarify. Yes.
I don't know how well I'd be skating in that rain on that water, but hey.
It would be very impressive. Yeah.
I got to try it sometime.
I worked in Venice for a little bit. So I was right on Electric Avenue, and I'd go play flag football in the sand when I was much younger and in better shape. We're playing for, you know, an hour and a half on sand would not wreck me for a week like it would now. But
super cool.
Great time.
Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah. And those roller skaters are serious out there for sure.
As I say, like, this is legit. This is roller skating at a different level. Like,
so how do you go from having way too many wigs that you can't do anything with, to your agency now, unemployable, your company now.
So it's been quite a journey. So I saw balding companies in whatever shape or form you call them, I saw it as a form of creative outlet that would enable me to create my dreams. So that combination of creativity and financial freedom was something that always drove me. And so the idea that I could do that for the rest of my life was something that inspired me. So I've been building companies, as I say, my entire life. And it got to a point where I bought one of the first AI voice analytics companies in the world. And that was incredibly exciting because we were still in South Africa at the time. We took VC funding for it. It was a whole story. It's in the book. And so anyone listening can read that backstory. And it was just a very inspiring time to have the opportunity to come and build a company. So that was over a decade ago, because I've been obsessed with AI my entire life and technology my entire life. And as a result of selling that, I kept thinking about like what's next. And I loved working with founders and helping founders, and I wanted to build a VC firm. So I was honored by the UN, got a big appointment by the UN. And so I built a VC firm. And again, I was obsessed with the AI, and I was obsessed with helping the best founders make the world fundamentally a better place. And I believe that they could do that through profit-driven ventures. And in helping my founders, I could see on an ongoing basis that people would come to me, like CEOs and executives would come to me, and they'd say, I have this problem. Can you help me solve it? And it got to a point where I'd constantly be reaching out to my founders, and I'd be engineering solutions for these executives, where I'd be like, this AI tool company I work with, and this AI tool company I work with, and this AI expert, each one of these people and each one of these things can help support you in trying to achieve the goal that you want. And usually the goal is, how do I transform my business from where it is to where I want it to be? So they want to scale their businesses, and often they're frustrated by, you know, the limitations of time and, you know, efficiency and these kinds of things. And so I got to a point where I was like, can I build an algorithm to do this in a much more efficient way than I've been doing it myself, which is very manual. And so I recruited, I would like to believe, the world's best team to support me to do this. And we're doing this together at Unemployable AI. And I'm incredibly proud and excited because we're working with some incredible founders and CEOs where, their companies deserve to be very big companies, and they're using the power of AI to do that in a really smart way. And that only came from being a VC and working hands-on with many, many smart founders for a very long time. So you feel free to ask me any questions, but I hope I've done a pretty decent job of explaining what we're doing.
Yeah. Can you give some, I guess maybe an example, like a little peek behind the curtain of how it works?
Sure. So let's take, for example, a healthcare company. So a healthcare company that's it's raised funding, it's got employees, it's got IP, it's got customers, it's doing well, but it's at a point where it can do substantially better. And it's at that point where it's like, okay, we feel somewhat, I won't use the word stuck, but I'd say we're at an inflection point. I think that's a good way to end. They come to me and they're like, okay, We've done a brilliant job. We have all these high profile investors invested, and, you know, like big companies and those things. We've got all these customers. We've got the distribution. We've got all these things, but we want to be acquired for a substantial amount of money. We want to be acquired, and we know there's certain things we have to achieve, and we know that you know the playbook how to get there, and we also know that you know AI. And so, for example, building our brand, we know that we are not seen in the market as a brand. We are good at what we do. People trust us, but we are not seen as a very sophisticated brand that the market trusts. Can you help us to brand ourselves in a way where investors will respond better to us, customers that are outside of these networks, you know, mainstream customers will respond better to us, and each one of these core constituencies that we would like to incorporate into our business so we can get even bigger, we want to engage with them more deeply, and we want to convert more of them into customers and investors in there. And we know you can help us do that. So, for example, with the branding, I've spent a substantial amount of time building the unemployable brand. I've had to go through, you know, branding exercises and all those things. And I work with the best branding people in the world now who have got very strong AI backgrounds. And so working with this company, where usually, for example, a roadmap just in terms of like a blueprint for a startup like this would cost like $150,000. And instead saying, well, I don't want you to pay $150,000. Through the power of our experts and their knowledge of AI and the knowledge and the AI itself, we can create this brand for you around your business, which will enable you to scale in a massive way. And it will cost you less than a tenth of the price. And you'll get that result you wanted, but the experts don't have to do as much heavy lifting. So they get to focus on the most creative parts, and the AI gets to focus on the part that it does best. And so building out that algorithm and making sure that we get the customer the result they want, which is being seen in the market as a very trustworthy brand that, you know, people would be willing to use on a day-to-day basis in terms of healthcare, has been a very interesting use case.
I like it. And you've gotten to talk with all these different founders, and you talked about how they have a lot of them have similar goals or the same goal. And is there also, I always like kind of the failing side of things as well. Is there like a common mistake that a lot of them make that maybe they can't see because they're so in it, you know, in the brand?
To some extent, yes. Like if I look, the ones that are willing to take the biggest risks up front are the ones, because with the risk taking comes the idea that it's like, okay, I'm not scared. If it doesn't work out, I'll just keep on going, versus believing that they can take the risks later down the line. I think that plays a role. I can give you a real life example. And so I think that's a good example where part of what I do is I have got an insane network and I'm really lucky. But when it comes to building these companies, being brave enough to reach out to people who may come across as very intimidating to you, the having the bravery to just say, I'm going to reach out to those people because it's in my company's and my best interests, having that bravery and doing it is incredibly important versus saying, I can do it down the line and I don't need to. So for example, when I'm working with companies and they ask me, like for example, one of the modules we have, so I've discussed the branding, but one of the modules we have is like helping companies scale through their fundraising. That's a big thing. And so a lot of the people that these founders would be raising from, if they're working with me through this algorithm I built, is people with a substantial amount of money. So people who have built companies, who have had liquidity events, and now they have money to invest. And so a lot of founders who have done this the first time rather than second or third time founders are intimidated to talk to people who have sold a company for like 500 million or a billion. And so ensuring that I train them and coach them, again, using the power of AI, so that my team got the, as I say, I got like former Goldman Sachs partners in that on the team. So that when the team is helping the founder, it's like by the time the founder meets with those investors, we've done the work of like coaching them to feel comfortable, letting go of that fear of like, okay, this person has a lot of money, but at the same time, the AI is doing like the investor outreach and those kinds of things, the optimization of the actual package for those investors. But that's where I see a lot of challenge, where if I look at the portfolio, the ones that do the best are the ones that are willing to do the most uncomfortable stuff upfront versus say, down the line. And your down the line might look like your second or third time, you know, building a company, because your first time didn't work because you were filled with self-doubt, or you're concerned what people think of you, or you weren't fully believing in your product. So I try to incorporate all those elements into helping these companies scale, so that I experienced this stuff myself. I know what it's like. So it's like these small human AI components that enable a company to succeed in a really big way, but incorporating that human element too is extremely important.
Well, maybe that segues nicely into another question I want to ask. You've done a lot of speaking, you've done TED Talks, and I think again, to reference a Seinfeld bit, this is not common. I love Seinfeld as well, but his joke that public speaking is the number one fear and death is number two. So if you were at a funeral, you would rather be in the casket than doing the eulogy. And I think public speaking, and I would say to some extent, based off your answer, presenting to investors or even just to like a board or, you know, whoever, I think can really be intimidating for a lot of people. So what's your top public speaking tip?
AI. Like, I'm going to come clean with you. So I had those issues. So what I used to do was early on, one of my investors used to write my speeches for me because it was like a third party versus, you know, me and it's personal. So I was like, if I'm learning someone else's speech, maybe this is less scary. And I used to listen to it with Siri in it, and it got easier and easier. But what I have found is the AI has given me, like, for example, I use Speechify nonstop, like compulsively. And so for presenting to investors in that, I spent a ton of time. So I'm at a point now where I observe myself, I observe my blood pressure, my heart, I don't know if you know about like heart rate coherence and these things. So when a founder's pitching me, I've been doing this long enough, and I've been in rooms where I watch investors switch off. The founder is not aware of this, but like really high profile, like, you know, like Midas list investors, and I'm watching their blood pressure raise as the founders are pitching. And I was like, this is a very interesting thought experiment, because if the founder is doing their absolute best, but at the same time, the investor is anxious or losing interest, that founder is completely unaware of what is actually happening. They think they're doing a good job when they've lost the investor. How do we ensure that doesn't happen? And so when I'm doing like I spend a substantial amount of time on like the fundraising stuff, because many of these companies at an inflection point need to raise substantial capital in order to get to where they want to go and be acquired, whatever the case may be. And so it's like, it's those small things where it's like, okay, let's use the AI. So you're going to pitch me on Zoom, I'm going to transcribe it using like Otter, and then I'm going to listen to it over and over. I'm going to run sentiment analysis on it, and I'm going to see where I switched off, where like my team switched off, where did you lose us? And so you've got the AI analyzing it. You've also got the humans analyzing it. So you're like, it's a, you know, sentiment and these kinds of things, which is, you know, I'm obsessed with voice. Those kinds of things, ensuring that from a presentation perspective, the cadence the person speaks at, the words they use, which words they emphasize, all these kinds of things, whilst they may be subtle, while people are like, they're not that important, they're actually extremely important, because, you know, there's so many studies that have been done where a person comes to a conclusion about you in the first like few seconds they've interacted with you. So making sure that presentation, the materials, all those things, like, as I said, it's extremely important. But I think giving yourself the opportunity to say, okay, I will use the AI to help me be the very best presenter I can be. Like, I used to have problems with my throat, and I used to get like a sore throat in there presenting. And I was like, why? And I was like, because I needed to train myself. And so having the AI as a companion coach, which is like, we do role playing all the time. Like, I do substantial amounts of role playing with the AI, where by the time I'm presenting, it's like, I've done it so many times, and I've done it to a coach who's been ranking me. So when I do a presentation or something, I will take the entire presentation. I will give it to the AI. The AI will say to me like, oh, this was a 7 out of 10. These are the two things you can improve for the next time. And this is available to absolutely anyone. This is not just available to me. Like, as I say, these are things that if your listeners are interested, I could do LinkedIn posts. They can connect with me. Every single one of the things I talk about are readily available. It's just like being pretty like brave about it and saying, am I ready for a machine to give me feedback? That's the biggest thing. The ego, surrendering the ego and saying, it's going to be uncomfortable for the first few times, but it's okay, because it's going to help me get better. And when you see that improvement as a presenter, where people are like, oh, you speak so clearly. Oh, this is so interesting. I'm like, hey, that was the AI. This is good. I'm getting somewhere. My human coach wasn't as good as the AI in this situation. So thank you, AI.
And again, maybe this segues very nicely, because there could be people who do not have to do public speaking in their jobs. We talked about a nice use case with that, but another question I always ask is a question you wish you were asked more frequently. And I'm sure you have a great answer on this based off everything you've been saying, but how can AI empower not just businesses, but also individuals in their daily lives beyond a public speaking example like you just gave?
Absolutely. I can't encourage people enough to think of the problem you have. Like, just be like, okay, I have XYZ problem. And think about, okay, well, if I had someone that I could teach to help me solve it, would I be willing to take that leap of faith and teach them? And so for me, I'm learning Italian at the moment, and I have an AI coach teaching me Italian, and it's GPT, and we have a very good thing going on. I studied law many years ago, and I was running a company, and, you know, I studied law at the same time. And I was like, hey, I may want to do like a PhD in law. And I was like talking to GPT, and I was like, GPT, how do you feel about this? How would we do this? Like, could you be a coach in a way that you could just like teach me about the aspects of law versus me going to school right now and learning law? So like as a hobby, I have a new book I'm working on, and it's helping me with the new book. So even though I'm the creative force behind the book, I being down the rabbit hole enough with my book that I knew I needed someone to take my content every day, because I use voice notes while I'm running to talk. I know I sound like I'm absolutely insane, but I've got the system down. So if you ever want to write a book, just reach out to me. And so I have these voice notes, and because I'm an audio-based learner. And so I have all these voice notes, and I knew where I lost the most time when it came to writing the book. So it took me 3 hours to write my book. And I was like, okay, in order to improve this for myself, I need someone with a critical eye or critical ear, whatever the case may be, to give me feedback in terms of the holes in the story. So this new book is around like my relationship with AI. And, you know, I do a lot of meditation. I do a lot of like manifestation. I do a lot of like Joe Dispenza stuff. And I wanted to share that with people, how you can manifest a company into existence. And I wanted to do it real time in terms of using the meditation, using the personal work that I do behind the scenes in order to build my company. And it's like, I want to be pretty transparent about this, that there's a ton of personal work every day that goes into supporting me mentally and physically and emotionally to build a company. And so I wanted someone that was safe to give me that feedback in terms of what I'm thinking about with the book. And it's been incredible. And so it's not writing the book, it's acting like my editor and publisher. So I have a very successful editor, and I wanted to have something crisp and clean before I took it to him. And I was like, I just want a partner to collaborate and talk to me about this. And so this morning, for example, I was like, okay, you asked me for this contents. I've given you this contents. Dig holes, be my editor and tell me where it's flawed. Came back with like 8 questions. So at no point was GPT writing the content. GPT was having this like very probative, like, you got holes here, you got holes here. This is fantastic, but you still need more here. Like, I don't know what you're thinking about. Like, take me through like the heartache, take me through the difficulties, take me through the sleepless nights. And I was like, oh wow, I'm backing away from that again, even though I'm trying to write a book about this. So that was very interesting. So as far as what people are trying to do, like my husband is a marathon runner. He's training for the Tokyo Marathon. He uses AI coaches. He was telling me yesterday in terms of all these different AI coaches he's using and seeing what's working. And I think that's the fun part, is that I created a GPT chef. And so we've been playing with recipes, and it creates all these wild recipes. And then I have to go and create them with my husband. And so I think there's nothing that you couldn't do with the AI in your daily life that wouldn't, if you are open and curious enough, say, oh my word, this is delightful. Like, even if it's like mildly crazy, it's delightful, and it's adding to my quality of life in some shape or form.
What's one of the recipes that you're like, this is a staple?
So we were talking about you having a cold. So I'm sitting in, I think we were in Seoul, yeah, in December. And it was tough, you know, like we're staying at a good hotel, but the language barrier was tough. And I wasn't feeling well. And it was over the Christmas holidays, so I've never had access to a doctor. And I'm like, GPT, I feel so sick. Like, please, can you help me? Like, we're at the hotel. We have the limitations of what's inside the hotel. I need you to craft me like an elixir. So came up with this elixir. He's like, okay, it's turmeric. And he tells me the quantity of turmeric and ginger and fresh mint and lemon and honey. And he explains to me all the reasons, each one of these things, like the lemon, these are the properties of the lemon, and the turmeric, this is what it does. So we order it downstairs, and GPT says, here's a picture so you can like feel inspired. And I felt unbelievably better. Like, I highly recommend for anyone that's feeling really sick, the combination of those things is mind-blowingly good, and it tastes really good too. So I was like, GPT, you're genius, you made me better. Like, my ears don't feel as blocked, and my throat doesn't hurt as much, and it was super soothing. So I was really excited. But there have been some pretty wild times. So I went to Florence in September last year, and I was like, GPT, create for me a wardrobe. This is really funny. And I was like, I want to look stylish. And, you know, the temperature is different to LA. So GPT comes up with this wardrobe. It's very, very sophisticated. He's like, you must take leather pants. You must take ankle boots. You must take a scarf, a silk blouse. He tells me all this stuff. So I don't trust my human judgment, which is really gets weird. Okay. So I have like cool summer clothes. No, I leave all the summer clothes. I take the winter clothes GPT tells me to take. Guess what? It's scorchingly hot and I cannot wear a single thing in my wardrobe because it's all winter stuff. So I'm like, okay, when the AI can't actually feel the temperature in real life, that's where you don't trust the AI and you trust human judgment.
So. Amazing. Or you just live here in Texas where it's 80 degrees after it's 40 degrees earlier in the day. So you get the best of both worlds. Yeah.
Best of both worlds. You would have solved it. I had to go and buy new clothes.
All right, Alicia, you're almost off the hook here, but we always like to wrap up with a top three. And we're just going to phrase this as the top three weird things you do every day.
Okay, so I start the morning. I have an LED, red light LED machine. So every morning I do that. And then in the evenings around 5 o'clock, I go for cryotherapy. So I go and stand in a freezing chamber, which is, I think, -272 degrees Fahrenheit. And I stand there with my husband, and there's pictures of proof. And we listen to Madagascar. You know that song, Madagascar? And we stand there and we dance inside the cryo chamber. And when I'm not doing that, I have a cold plunge in my on my deck. And so, yes, I use a cold plunge every day too, because I believe I want to live till 120. So I'm taking no chances. Let's see. The proof is in the pudding. If we're having this conversation when I'm super old and you're looking good and I'm looking good, it worked. If not, well, yeah.
It was worth the effort, at least.
There you go.
Nothing else. Well, this was fantastic. If you've mentioned a couple times that you have all these resources to give people, all this good stuff, where can they find you?
Sure. So readunemployable.com is an easy way to find it. You can find more about Unemployable AI there too. And for LinkedIn, social media, you can find me at aliciasolberg.com. And my book, which I'd love your feedback on, is Unemployable, How AI Transformed My Work and My Life. And the easiest place to find that is on Amazon.
Lovely. And we'll have links to all of those in the show notes. Alicia, thank you again for chatting. This was so much fun.
Thank you for hosting me. I loved every minute of it.
And of course, we have to end with a corny joke, as we always do. What did the gamer use to make bread?
Tell me.
Nintendo. Get after it, my people.
Love it.
Good People Cool Things is produced in Austin, Texas. If you were a fan of this episode, go ahead and hit that follow button. That helps more people hear the show. You can send me a message, joey@goodpeoplecoolthings.com. Thank you to all of the guests who have been on Good People Cool Things. You can check out all the old episodes via goodpeoplecoolthings.com. As always, thank you for listening and have a wonderful day. Woo!